is there a lot to learn from Lincoln in such a short period of his life, that one term in Congress?
I think there is. Partly, very few people spend very much time on Lincoln's one term in Congress. If they do, they mention that he was opposed to the Mexican War and that his opposition actually cost him support here in Illinois, and his successor failed to gain election. It was the one Whig district that Illinois had when Lincoln was in Congress. Fortunately for the Whigs, they picked up a different district when Lincoln stepped down. But his successor, which was his second law partner, Stephen Logan, was unable to overcome sort of the hostility of Lincoln's anti-war message. So people really focus on that, and that's about it. They may mention that Lincoln met Alexander Stevens and was very impressed with him. And of course, Alexander Stevens of Georgia became the vice president of the Confederacy several years later. But I think that our approach of looking at the documents, looking at the legislation that he considered as a congressman, the acts that Congress passed in that one term when he was there, really give a different perspective on him as a person new to Washington, considering all of these new, in many cases, these national issues that he really hadn't dealt with even in his four terms in the Illinois General Assembly.
Now, you mentioned legislation, but there's you're also going to look at notes, correspondence, things like that. That's where you can really tell a little bit more about what was in his mind, what he was going through during that period, right?
Oh, absolutely. Unfortunately, some of his incoming correspondence was destroyed by Lincoln himself. He and Mary, before they left to go to Washington in 1861, took out the trash. And a lot of that was simply not to cover up anything, but just to get rid of old papers. And unfortunately, we've lost a lot of that correspondence from those early years. We do have some letters by him that are still at the National Archives or in other repositories, but we'd love to have much more because, as you say, those letters can be quite revealing. It's the same sort of lesson we learned with Lincoln's legal papers years ago, and that is individual documents maybe don't tell us everything we want to know, but the collectivity of hundreds of documents or thousands of documents really do paint a new picture.
It's safe to say he didn't know that he would be Abraham Lincoln, right, at that time.
That is safe to say.
Let's talk a little bit about the papers of Abraham Lincoln, because I'm not sure that everybody understands how the project works. Give us some background on it first, how it began and what you're up to these days.
The papers of Abraham Lincoln actually began as the Lincoln Legal Papers back in 1985. Ironically, to complete the work that had been done in the 1940s and 50s on collecting what was published as the collected works of Abraham Lincoln. And so Roy Basler and his colleagues in the 40s and 50s had left out the legal papers. And so the Lincoln legal papers began to fix that gap. As time went on and as we completed the Lincoln legal papers and published a comprehensive edition in 2000 and began work on a selective print edition, we realized that really we need a new edition of the papers of Abraham Lincoln. The Collected Works was a wonderful resource. It supported 60 years of research on Abraham Lincoln and the Civil War, but it didn't include incoming correspondence. It had very light annotation. And frankly, a lot of more documents had surfaced since then, and so even written by Lincoln. And so we thought that there was a need to do that, and in 2001, the Illinois Historic Preservation Agency approved the expansion of the Lincoln legal papers into the papers of Abraham Lincoln, which now is Series 1, the legal papers, which is done. Series 2, what we call Illinois papers, which are his personal and political correspondence from the earliest documents we have to his inauguration as president. And then Series 3, of course, his presidential papers. And we're finding new documents all the time, both at the National Archives and through auction catalogs, through private collectors coming forward and saying, hey, I've got a document. The project really rests on three pillars of support, if you will. One of those is federal support from the National Endowment for the Humanities and the National Historical Publications and Records Commission. A second pillar is the state of Illinois supporting us both through the University of Illinois Springfield and, of course, through the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Library and Museum. And then the third leg or pillar of support is private foundations, private corporations, private individuals.
We're talking with the director and editor, Daniel Stoll. He's with the Papers of Abraham Lincoln, based in Springfield. Let me go back to what you said about you're finding material all the time, papers all the time. I would be surprised in this day and age that somebody hasn't come forth already and said, hey, I have something, or there's something that's in an archive somewhere, but yet you do make discoveries on a regular basis.
We really do, and we've literally had documents walk through the door of the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Library. Someone's visiting, and they bring us a document. We get emails and phone calls on a fairly regular basis of new documents. We obviously have to deal with forgeries and facsimiles and some other kinds of sort of false leads, but it's amazing to me how many documents still come forward, including documents written by Abraham Lincoln that were not known before, that were not recorded. And I think part of that has been that for the past several decades, if you have a Lincoln document, there's really nobody to report that to. And so we become a sort of magnet for that kind of information. And it's also true that people tend to diminish, oh, I just have a commission signed by Lincoln. I just have an appointment signed by Lincoln. And while those documents in and of themselves are not going to revolutionize our understanding of Abraham Lincoln, if you're interested in that person that Lincoln gave a commission to or an appointment to a civilian post, that becomes a very important document. And even then, I think there's some really interesting things that revolve around these. Let's take military commissions. Lincoln signed perhaps as many as 10,000 military commissions. But there's some wonderful sort of stories that surround that. When shortly after Willie died in the White House in 1862, Tad Lincoln, the Lincoln's youngest son, was also very ill. And Lincoln sat by his bedside. And as a very concerned father but a very busy president, one thing that he could do while he's sitting there by Tad's bedside is sign military commissions. And so there are reminiscences of him sitting by Tad's bedside with a stack of commissions, signing Abraham Lincoln over and over.
And, of course, the reason we had you in today was to talk more about a $400,000 grant from the National Endowment for the Humanities. And this is going to go over the next three fiscal years. It's going to allow you to do a lot more investigation of his work during his time in Congress, his one term in Congress, but also they'll be placing things online. People will be able to access this material. Talk more about that and the importance of it.
The grant comes in a form of $100,000 of outright grant and then $300,000 of matching money. And that's important for us as well because that assists in making the case with private foundations, private corporations, or even individuals. We need to raise basically $100,000 a year from those sources to match the NEH grant. If we don't match that, we don't get that money. And so it has the effect of doubling every private donation, every corporate or foundation contribution to the Papers of Abraham Lincoln. And earlier this year, we received a wonderful partnership with Iron Mountain going forward. And Iron Mountain is a particularly important partner, number one, because they're our first corporate donation and sponsorship. But secondly, our work interacts and intersects really well with what Iron Mountain specializes in. Iron Mountain stores documents, and that means both physical storage but also electronic storage. And one of our long-term concerns is we're scanning these documents in over 600 repositories all over the country and even around the world. We want to make sure that those digital images persist.